called by a coin toss.
Tonight is a victory for the grassroots.
I'm just honored. I'm really honored. And I want to congratulate Ted.
It's because of illness. Obviously, the voters are sick of me, and I need to acknowledge that.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10, and it is February 2nd, 2016. Welcome to Tuesday. Welcome to Groundhog Day. And the day after the Iowa caucus, we'll be hearing a lot about the caucus all morning long. And Steve Cochran will be there live with the crew starting at 6 o'clock to give us a full wrap-up on things. And coming up in this show today, we actually have a groundhog here who's going to be picking our stocks and helping your portfolio out. No, I'm just kidding. It'll be Paul Nolte who will join us, Chicago's best portfolio manager, to tell us what's going on with all of the volatility, continued volatility, and help us sort of manage our way ahead. That's all coming up. But first, your global market intel. Asian stock markets were mostly lower today as the price of oil extended losses following a 6% plunge that was sparked by manufacturing data from the world's two largest economy. The Institute for Supply Management says U.S. factory activity shrank in January for a fourth straight month. And that is because of a strong dollar and a weak demand overseas. It's pinching manufacturers. The ISM's manufacturing index followed a survey showing another slowdown in China's manufacturing. Benchmark U.S. crude oil is above $31 a barrel. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrials fell about 0.1% to 1640.449. Standard and Poor's fell. The NASDAQ composite rose just a bit. The dollar fell against the yen and the euro. Big news yesterday from Google. Google's digital ad business is apparently so profitable that the new parent company, Alphabet, can lose more than $1 billion on risky ventures and shrug. And on Monday, they released earnings that show they are now the world's most popular profitable company, beating Apple. Alphabet shares up nearly 7% in after-hours trading. Reuters business reporter Deborah Todd.
What perhaps might have been a surprise is just how strong the core business is and core just search, just what Google is all about, how strong that is and remains to be. And if that can remain strong for the future, that can support any of their other projects, and that allows for limitless growth.
The earnings release spelled out the cost of running mostly experimental businesses that aim to do everything from eliminating human driving to curing cancer. Those operations posted an operating loss of $1.2 billion on revenue of $151 million in the fourth quarter. Google, meanwhile, produced an operating profit of $6.8 billion on revenue of $21.2 billion. The market futures this morning on Wall Street they are showing what could be an open that will be lower this morning. Dow futures are off about, let me refresh my page, on 124, triple digits again this morning. The S&P futures off 16. Let's bring in Paul Nolte. He is one of the portfolio managers at Kingsview Investments and, in my opinion, one of the best portfolio managers in the country. Paul, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. You know, we said we were going to have a groundhog on today picking stocks, but I think you're probably a little bit better than that.
Well, I did see my shadow yesterday, so I think we're in for more volatility and maybe a little bit lower market for another 6 weeks before the sun will come back out and shine on Wall Street again.
At least six more weeks. What is fueling all of this? Is it still China?
It is still China. It is energy. And if you watch the markets over the last, really since the end of the year, they have tracked energy prices almost dollar for dollar. And there is a bullish and bearish case for energy. The bull case is that energy prices are declining because we have so much supply. Saudi Arabia is pumping a lot. U.S., we've got inventory levels at all-time highs. So it's a matter of working off that excess supply, and then energy prices will revert back to $40 or $60 a barrel. The bearish case is that this is a signal of slowing global growth, and certainly China's at the forefront of that with their numbers yesterday. The U.S.'s manufacturing side, which does use an awful lot of energy, is down again. So, again, that is not such a simple solution of just working off the excess supply. The demand is the problem there. And we could see from the bearish case, you could see energy down to somewhere in the $20 to $25 range on a barrel of oil.
We want to continue our conversation with you coming up, and we'll talk a little bit more about yesterday's report on consumer spending, what consumers are doing, and then see what's ahead today. And maybe we could find some bright spots as well. So we'll continue our conversation with Paul Nolte right after we check traffic.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stock markets were mostly lower today as the price of oil extended losses. U.S. factory activity shrank in January for a fourth straight month. The Dow's and the S&P 500 were down fractionally yesterday. The NASDAQ picked up a tenth of a percentage point. Automakers will release vehicle sales for January today, and a number of companies report quarterly earnings. Exxon, Pfizer, and UPS report before the market opens. Exxon is expected to post one of its worst quarterly earnings reports in years because of sliding oil prices. Google's digital ad business called Alphabet did better than analysts had anticipated, its shares rising 7% in after-hours trading, despite the company's billion-dollar operating loss on experimental businesses that aim to do everything from eliminating the human driver to curing cancer. Some New York Uber drivers are going on strike to protest the company's decision to cut fares in the city by 15%. They say the rate cut in New York City will mean less money in their pockets. Uber says the fare reductions are helping drivers by drumming up business. Jim Ryan, ABC.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 520, our conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Investment this morning continues. Paul, you just heard the Wall Street report there about oil prices continuing and also some earnings reports out today. Yesterday, we heard about consumer spending, and there's a new Reuters poll out today that says people are saving all of that money they're saving on gas instead of spending it. What impact is this having on the economy as a whole?
Oh, it's having a negative impact on the economy because, again, spending is what generates a lot of the economic activity. The consumer in the U.S. is 70% of growth in the United States. So when you look at the consumer spending, everybody is looking at them to try to pick things up. The problem that we have right now, and part of the reason why we saw the news out of Japan last week and cutting rates to a negative interest rate, is around the world the consumer is essentially sitting on their hands and saving. Part of that is because there still is a fair amount of debt on the consumer side that they're trying to work down. And so they're still a nervous bunch, and until that gets going, I think we're stuck in this malaise for a while yet.
Since we chatted last time here on the show with you, the Fed had another meeting as well, and they sort of were a little dovish about what might be ahead. There are a lot of people that are saying that there will not be multiple interest rate increases this year, and they probably made a mistake when they raised rates last time. Are you in that camp? What did you take away from the Fed's meeting?
I think Chairman Yellen came just a hair shy of saying, I'm sorry. I think the Fed will be on the sidelines here. And again, certainly indicated by Japan cutting rates to a negative level on Friday. We have negative interest rates in Europe. We have them in Asia. We have them around the world. So for the United States to be the only country to be raising rates in the face of slowing global growth, I think is a mistake, and I think they're certainly anticipating that inflation will pick up. They're looking at employment, and employment looks good relative to everything else. But again, as we mentioned before, with the consumer kind of sitting on their hands, higher interest rates I do not think are going to be in the cards this year.
So as a portfolio manager, are you finding any bright spots out there for people? Where should, if we are not saving our money and putting it into our retirement or portfolios, where should we put it?
Really, a defensive stance makes sense here. You do want to sit on, again, a little extra cash. But the fixed income market, for the fact that you're only getting maybe 1-2.5% on bonds, actually is not a bad place to hang out for a while. In the stock market, though, you want to be in a little bit more defensive stance. Technology, not normally considered a defensive sector, actually has a fair amount of value in it because you're seeing a lot of spending still by corporations in that sector. So Google is a perfect example. Microsoft has been doing very well. But again, you look at the consumer staples, utilities, the more defensive parts of the market, I think is a good place to be in if you have to be invested in the market over the short term. But I think there's some good long-term value in many of those names.
Earnings season has not been that bad. We've seen a couple of down reports, but otherwise the airlines seem to be doing well. Google yesterday, Alphabet was gangbusters. That's a positive takeaway, isn't it?
It is, but it's kind of interesting when you talk about Wall Street and you talk about earnings beating expectations. It's always something to kind of chuckle with, because if I expect you to do poorly in school and you all of a sudden pull a C, that's better than expectations, but it's still not all that terrific. And that's kind of where Wall Street is. When we take a look at earnings on a year-over-year basis, earnings are really only up about 3% or so, with about half of the S&P reporting right now. More importantly, top-line growth, overall revenue, is up just slightly. So we're not seeing the revenue gains that are going to really fuel earnings growth. And that's the problem that we've had. And we've had it really now for the last couple of years, as earnings have actually come down on the S&P 500 over the last year and a half to 2 years.
We have about a minute left. I want to get your impressions of the election, the Iowa caucuses. What impact is this election year going to have on markets, do you think?
The election year as a whole, I think, will have an impact. I don't think Iowa yet has an impact. It's the first, but I don't think it's going to have a major impact. If you go back to 2012, Rick Santorum won Iowa. So I don't think it's necessarily indicative of who ultimately will be the candidates for president. But as we start to shake out and go through all the various primaries and see who the candidates are, and really start to look at what their policies might be. They will obviously have to work with Congress on that. Then I think the markets may sit up and take notice, but I don't think that will occur until maybe late summer.
Paul Nolte is a chartered financial analyst, portfolio management expert at Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, thanks for being with us in the opening bell this morning.
Always enjoyable. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. It's 5:27. Still ahead. More on the latest from Iowa. It's a neck-and-neck tie pretty much on the Democratic side. And in Chicago, we have teachers who've rejected a contract. The latest news is next. It's 5:27.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:37. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. In 2014, 48 colleges and universities reportedly spent $772 million combined on athletic facilities. That's an 89% increase from $408 million spent in 2004. Figures are including things like debt payments, capital expenses, maintenance costs. It brings us to a discussion, a conversation of the business of college, the business of finances, especially where college athletics are concerned. Joining us on the opening bell this morning, Ed Sherman, a former Chicago Tribune reporter, also a sports reporter, covered the 1985 Bears Super Bowl season, now is a blogger at the Sherman Report, shermanreport.com. And Ed, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, one of the questions you ask, or one of the things that you suggest in your latest story, is that maybe we reporters should be sending more financial requests, open information requests to colleges and universities to find out how much money they're spending. And you say it's going to be eye-popping in some cases.
Well, this was a story that I wrote for Poynter.org, and actually I write a sports journalism column for that website, and I wrote about a series that ran in the Washington Post by Will Hobson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. Actually, some of the installments ran in the Chicago Tribune, picked up, and it was about finances in college sports and how it's just spiraling. The ironic thing about it was that I did a similar series about the finances in college sports back in the early 1990s, and back then it was the same theme, that the spending's out of control, And you know, as I told Will, the only difference was that there was another zero at the end of those numbers. I think back then we were amazed that a basketball coach or a football coach could make $200,000 or $300,000 a year. And now that's like, you know, that's like pocket change. Now they're talking about, you know, $3-4 million a year for these coaches. So, you know, it's the same story that this keeps on continuing, that just this rampant spending where everyone feels like they need to keep up with the other guy. And the minute they build a new facility for $60 million, someone builds one for $80 million, and you're already behind.
WGN's Dave Ennett is going to join our conversation here. Dave, and you know, one of the questions I have is this out of control? Is spending out of control, or is it?
Well, I think what Ed's pointing to, and Ed, you and I have been around the game for a long
right.
time, and this arms race in terms of facility, in terms of coaching salaries, it is nothing new. Maybe what's changed is the amount of money that's coming in to the colleges and universities now because of the big television contracts. And in some cases, like in the Big Ten, the Big Ten Network has provided yet another revenue stream where there's more money there. And this money is finding its way into new facilities and in new positions in athletic departments and facilities. And I think that's really behind a lot of this, isn't it?
Well, I think that some of that, Dave, I think that as the series points out, even with all this money coming in, they're spending it faster than it comes in. A lot of these athletic departments do run deficits, and they're not self-supporting. I mean, they need help, they need assistance, and obviously the other, you know, a lot of these athletic departments rely on, and one of the parts of the series talked about how the athletic departments rely on student fees. I mean, a lot of these schools charge student fees for to support these athletic departments, these athletic programs. And so, you know, you might be paying $200,000 to $300,000 to support an athletic department, even though you never go to a game. So these student fees play a factor. There's a lot of things that, you know, that are propping up these athletic departments. Listen, Dave, you know, and I'm a big fan of college sports, but I have always kind of just wondered, why hasn't someone kind of stepped in and said enough is enough? I mean, Clemson is building a new football facility that includes a beach volleyball court, a miniature golf course, and a barbershop. I mean, isn't that a little excessive?
You would think so.
For student athletes, and you know that someone else. Well, if Clemson's doing it, you know, Florida State's got it. Well, we got to. You know, how long will it be before? I'm sure they already have those things anyway. But, you know, some of those things, especially down south, I saw, you know, during the title week, they had a report from Alabama. They were interviewing the coach at ESPN, and it was at their facility. I'm like thinking, well, what country club is that at? You know, it looked, you know, phenomenal. And keep in mind, these are college students. And, you know, so it really does kind of open some eyes when you start looking at the raw numbers about how much money is actually being spent and whether or not that's really the right way to go at universities where they're, you know, where the money is just so precious and you know, it could be used for other things.
And we're talking here about public universities,
right.
At least as far as the story goes. And of course, when you get into the public records, the open records request, as you suggest, the reporters should make those requests. Why haven't more done it, Ed? Or for just getting back to the journalism involved here, is it a question of being able to commit the resources? Because it's exhaustive work to put together a story like this.
Yeah, well, I would think that maybe people don't realize that they're available. In fact, in some cases, as the reporter told me, the Washington Post reporter, the school's already put that on the website. You know, they know that they have to report that it's going to be available. It's public record. And some of them, he said, even put it on the website. I think it's just a matter of them reporters doing the work and knowing that it's there. You know, another one of their stories was about all the amount of money that's being paid for coaches not to coach, you know, when they buy out these contracts early. It led with Ron Zook at Illinois, who was being paid a lot of money not to coach Illinois. And now we got a similar situation perhaps coming soon. Well, the Tim Beckman thing's in litigation, but they're going to, you know, they're going to have to pay him some sort of buyout. And they look at a basketball coach who might be jettisoned with a year to go on his contract, and John Gross.
Yeah, as a journalist who does this sort of investigative work, it is difficult. Newsrooms have been cut. There are, you know, fewer reporters out there doing the job. But anytime you follow the money, you're going to find stuff. And we're not going to say that every university's doing something wrong or bad or illegal, but following that money, as was done in this story, it was mentioned that Rutgers had an annual deficit and was losing a dollar for every second a year. I mean, it's that kind of stuff that you're going to uncover, right?
I think Rutgers' deficit was like $30 million, and they're in the Big Ten, obviously, so maybe that'll help out. But, you know, I mean, $30 million. I mean, can you imagine at a public university these days? And we know how, as I said, how scarce this the money is. I mean, it's a big investment. And I'm not and I love college sports. And the other part of it too also goes into, you know, should these athletes be paid? And when they say there's no money for these athletes, and yet you look at seeing some of these spiraling salaries for these coaches, they find the money to pay the coaches. As you know, I talked to Jay Billis of ESPN about it. They said they find the money. Who's an advocate of paying? You know, paying the athletes, they find the money to pay the coaches, yet they say they have no money for the students. And there's something probably wrong with that, too.
Well, ask the kids if they'd rather have the miniature golf course or get paid.
Yeah.
Right.
And the bitter pill to swallow here is many of these universities keep raising tuition, too. So for parents out there who are paying for college, I mean, watching these two sides of the story is just maddening.
Yeah. And they're both, there's many sides to the story, and I'm sure that you'll have athletic directors, you know, saying, hey, justify some of these expenses. To me, you know, when you have to pay so much money to retain a coach, when you're paying seven figures in some of these cases down south for not even head coaches, but coordinators. I mean, that's the going rate for some of these top coordinators. It's a lot of money. And then the facilities, obviously, that's, you know, an increase of 89%. What is that telling you? And that they're spending over 10 years an increase on facilities. And do you expect that to slow down? No, because someone's going to have, because everyone's trying to keep up. And you see what Northwestern's building, new facilities, which is great. But why do we need all these facilities? You know, back in the day when we were in the, you know, when we were going through school, they played in a football field and they had a locker room, Dave, right? I mean, that's how you did it.
Those days are so far gone, though, Ed.
Right.
Ed Sherman, we have to end it there. But Ed, thank you for being on the program today. Ed Sherman, you can follow him at Sherman_report and read ShermanReport.com. Thanks for being on the Opening Bell this morning. It's 5:47.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:51. Dow futures are lower in triple digits, off 102 points this morning. The S&P futures are off 13. Now for a look at some of the commodity prices, here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, the beginning of a new trading week, a new trading month, started in the livestock industry with red-colored numbers. But as the day went on, we saw the market come from negative territory into positive territory. And by the end of the trading session, the February lean hog contract was down 75 cents a hundredweight, and the May lean hog contract down 10 cents. But the rest of the numbers were green. The cattle market traded lower a good part of the day, but came back to end higher as some of the traders and some of the packers are getting worried about the winter storm moving across the Midwest and what that could do to supplies of cattle and hogs coming to market. So at the end of the trading session, the April live cattle contract gained 60 cents yesterday to close at 134.60. And the April Fed feeder cattle contract up 57 cents for the day at $157.25.
All right, thanks, Orion. We'll keep monitoring the commodities numbers throughout the morning here on WGN, Your Money. On the Opening Bell now, it was a breakup that sort of came along with Valentine's Day, had a Valentine's theme yesterday. General Electric announced it is breaking up with CFL bulbs in order to produce more LED bulbs. WGN's Ryan Burrow has been covering the story. And Ryan, what was the announcement and how big of a deal is this from General Electric?
We all remember those switch-offs in the 2000s when people started moving away from the incandescent light bulbs to the CFLs, the compact fluorescent lights. Well, there's been a new update. The compact fluorescent lights, at least according to GE, are gone. They will exclusively be selling the LED lights starting at the end of this year.
Now, they sent a Valentine's-themed letter for this breakup, right?
Yeah, kind of appropriate for this time of year. Obviously, we've got Valentine's Day coming up, and it's essentially a breakup note saying, in essence, we're done with you, CFLs. We're breaking up, and we see LED as our future. So kind of a funny way of doing it, but on a serious point, this is something that, you know, every American's got light bulbs, every American's got lamps, and it's the future, is what GE sees of homes from here on out.
And so what do they think the benefits are going to be to both the consumers and them as a company?
Yeah, the reason they didn't make this jump sooner was because these LED lights were very expensive on the consumer market. It was still, you know, $15, $20, $30 to buy these LED lights. Well, like we see with any kind of technology, whether it be laptops or TVs, the prices eventually come down, and that's where GE is right now. They believe the prices come down to a place where it's affordable enough for people to go in and replace all their light bulbs with these LED light bulbs. They're still more expensive than the incandescents, but keep in mind, these LED light bulbs can last anywhere from 9, 10, 15, some maybe as long as 20 years without burning out, and they're using much less energy. Some of these using about 11% of the energy that an incandescent light bulb would be. So they see it, while people may be paying more cash out of their pocket to buy these, as a cost savings in the long run.
So for those people who don't like the look or feel of LED lights, when is the last date they can get the others, and do they have to start hoarding?
Well, you know, I mean, this is just GE. There are still going to be incandescents out there. There are still going to be CFLs out there. But, you know, the CFLs, a lot of people complained about for various reasons. Number one, when you flip the switch, sometimes it took a while for them to heat up. So a lot of people weren't thrilled with that. Sometimes they had dimmer issues where you couldn't dim with those lights. And, of course, there were environmental issues as well with, you know, little traces of mercury inside of those coily light bulbs. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be much love lost for the CFLs. Now, I know a lot of people love their incandescent light bulbs, and, you know, you're still going to be able to find those anywhere as of right now. But, you know, eventually LED is the way GE sees the world going. And keep in mind, too, these LED lights aren't just going to be light bulbs in your home. A couple of years down the road, you may start seeing these LED lights having the capability of connecting with your Wi-Fi, so you can use your smartphone to turn the lights on or off, or dim them, or even set them up in a way where when the sun goes down and the light goes down in one room, the LED lights go up. So GE sees this as kind of the future of a smart home.
WGN's Ryan Burrow with us this morning on the opening bell. The news yesterday really had no impact on GE stock, and in after hours trading, GE is lower, 28.57, off about a quarter of a percent. On the market futures this morning, the Dow futures again are showing an open that will be lower later. Dow futures off about 114 points, now 99 off 99. S&P futures off 12. We'll keep monitoring the markets throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show, and that's coming up next. That's our opening bell for this morning. Show is produced by Mary Sandberg. Thanks to Ross Cochran and our engineer, Ben Cortez, this morning. We'll see you back here bright and early tomorrow morning for the opening bell. It's 5:57.